This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.
Our failures took place over many years and administrations. There's no single individual who is responsible for our failures. Yet individuals and institutions cannot be absolved of responsibility. Any person in a senior position within our government during this time bears some element of responsibility for our government's actions. Having said that, it is not our purpose to assign blame. As we said at the outset, we look back so that we can look forward.
September 11th, Commission Chairman Thomas Kane in Washington, D.C. Thursday, speaking at a news conference at which his commission officially presented its report. NPR senior news analyst Dan Schor joins us. Dan, good morning.
Good morning, Scott.
Governor Kane, as he just certainly enunciated in that clip for us, said no one president, no one CIA agent, FBI agent, no one airport screener was responsible, but that all people who were highly placed in government must bear some responsibility because of the failure of the U.S. government to protect its citizens on September 11th. That strike you as a fair judgment?
Yes, I think it's a fair judgment. We have a situation in which there were opportunities, apparently, to be able to ward off this terrible blow. 10 of them, the commissioner says, and they were not seized upon, they were not used. Our officials, our people who run our government, talked about all these things they could do, but they didn't do anything. And so, yes.
Mm-hmm. So, some of the nine opportunities for intervention that were listed were somewhere as small as there were apparently fraudulent information on passports, which nobody caught. A lot of them had to do with the failure of the FBI or CIA that knew separate bits of information to combine them with each other at any one time.
And the other day they came upon some videotape at Dulles Airport in which apparently a couple of the hijackers actually went through. They were stopped. They were wanded, as it is said, patted down, and all the rest of it, and then were allowed to go through.
I'm told that's because the screeners at in those times, if we can cast back to that time 3 years ago, were set to find enough metal that would be contained in a .22 caliber pistol. And therefore, if you had just a 4-inch blade, that was considered something you could carry aboard because the entire air security system was premised on the idea that even hijackers would want to keep themselves alive.
Well, you know, as the commission says, there's no use going back and saying, oh, if they had known that this guy that they let through and all the rest, it's over, it's done, and the question is now the future. And I think that the commission has taken upon itself the duty, the obligation, to keep this pressure on. And then also these amazing women known as the Family Steering Committee, who actually forced the president against his own wishes to appoint this commission in the first place. I mean, there's an example of Jeffersonian democracy at work. You know, a lot of people who lost loved ones got together and said, we're going to make this happen. And now the question is whether they can continue making it happen.
What are the chances of bipartisan agreement on some of the overhaul that's recommended in intelligence agencies during what, after all, is an election year?
Well, the big question is, will they be able to get the president, to get the Congress to accept the idea of an intelligence czar, so-called? There are those who say that all you do is add extra layers of bureaucracy and it doesn't do any good. However, there is a lot of pressure on to do some really fundamental reorganization of the intelligence community, and who knows, it may happen.
Let's turn to, of course, events elsewhere in the world. In Iraq this week, the Philippines completed the withdrawal of 51 troops a month ahead of schedule, and this was presumably in return for the release of a Filipino hostage. But as we speak, 7 more people have been abducted, all truck drivers working for a Kuwaiti company and then an Egyptian diplomat.
This is now the acid test of whether this new regime that's being set up can really work. The Philippines, it was a matter of 51 people, not very important to the overall constellation there. But if one person can be taken hostage, and then you're told, he's hostage to your pulling your troops out. And then they say, oh dear, all right, we will pull our troops out. To allow that kind of blackmail to work is quite dangerous.
And elsewhere in the Middle East, Palestinian militants in Gaza have attacked police stations and kidnapped Palestinian officials. This is in protest of what they call corruption in Yasser Arafat's government. Is Yasser Arafat in any danger of being deposed as a leader by the Palestinian people at this point?
It's my opinion that he might well have been deposed by now were it not for the fact that Prime Minister Sharon continues to force the Palestinians to rally around him by threatening exile, threatening even assassination. I think if the Palestinians were left to themselves, they would have long since decided that this regime, basically headed by Arafat with a bunch of cronies that he brought with him 10 years ago from Tunisia, that has really lost its allure, and it's time to get a new regime of what's called the Young Guards. If it hasn't happened yet, it's because he has all that support, if I can put it that way, from Israel. But I suspect it may be happening soon.
Internal pressures may increase as Israelis withdraw from Gaza.
Exactly, especially if there'll be a piece of land to quarrel over. If Israel pulls out of Gaza, we're now talking not much land, but discussing real land. Then there's something to fight about.
The continuing humanitarian crisis in Darfur prompted the U.S. Congress yesterday to pass a resolution calling it, in fact, genocide. The Bush administration says what's been going on is terrible and murderous, but they have avoided using that word. Arab militias are still driving black farmers off their lands and result in deaths of tens of thousands of black Sudanese. Does this bring to mind some of the semantical arguments that went on in the Clinton administration when the massacres were going on in Rwanda?
Over Rwanda, it's sort of more of the same. There's a great resistance to calling it genocide. I'm not exactly sure why. Apparently, if you call it genocide, then you might have to do something about it. And if you don't call it genocide, you can merely say, this is really very, very bad, and we hope that something will be done about it.
Let me ask you, former National Security Advisor Sandy Berger quit his post as an advisor to the Kerry campaign this week. There, the allegations that he removed and destroyed copies of classified documents from the National Archives. Mr. Berger says it was all inadvertent. Richard Clark was on another part of the show, and he said, look, there were lots of copies of these memos. I can't figure out why he would want to do that, and he spoke up in Mr. Berger's behalf.
There's a big mystery there, which we will not solve in the next 30 seconds, which is all we have. And all I can say at this point is that apparently there was something in these papers which was going to make Sandy Berger and perhaps even President Clinton look bad when they came before the 9/11 Commission. And therefore, he didn't want those papers to be there. I don't want to take this further, because the more I think about it, the more I am mystified as to why it happened. So let's hope it'll be solved somehow.
Okay. Thanks very much, Dan Shore.